Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're tackling, well, kind of head-scratcher.
Oh.
Yeah. The idea of, you know, advanced technology existing before the biblical flood.
Intriguing, isn't it?
It is. Our source material is it's a lecture transcript by Professor Robert Van Noy.
Okay.
An Old Testament history expert. And let me tell you, his take on Genesis, well, it's going to make us rethink some assumptions.
I bet. What's his angle?
Well, Professor Van Noy starts by, you know, posing this question. What if the antediluvian world?
Okay.
That's before the flood, just to be clear. What if it was more, more technologically advanced than we typically think?
Than we give it credit for.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
So we're talking about the time of, like, Adam and Eve.
Right.
Not exactly known for their smartphones and wifey and all that.
Precisely. But right from the start, Genesis mentions Cain tilling the ground and Abel keeping sheep. That's not just, you know, casually gathering berries and chasing rabbits. We're talking deliberate agriculture, animal domestication.
Ah, so we're not talking about like cavemen here. We're talking about people who understood seasons, selective breeding, all that.
Exactly. That level of knowledge. I mean, it's usually associated with, you know, much later periods. It suggests a level of societal organization and technological know-how that's really quite surprising.
Mm. And it gets even more interesting. Cain's son, Enoch, builds a city. Now, I'm picturing something more like a fortified village than like a sprawling metropolis, but still.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been in New York City. But think about what building a city entails. It implies a settled community, some form of governance, probably specialized labor.
Right. You need architects, builders, maybe even some early form of urban planning.
Right.
This challenges the typical timeline we have for the development of early cities, right?
It does. The earliest known settlements, like Çatalhöyük in Turkey, date back to around 7500 BC. If the flood happens sometime around, say, 3000 BC, as some scholars believe,
right,
then the biblical timeline suggests a much earlier development of urban centers.
So we have agriculture, we have cities. What else?
Well, Professor Van Noy then points to Jubal, described as the father of those who play the harp and pipe.
Wait, music too. Okay, now I'm really curious. What kind of instruments were they playing? Did they have concerts back then?
Sadly, the transcript doesn't get into the specifics of their musical style, but it does highlight that this wasn't just a society, you know, solely focused on survival. They had developed art, culture, leisure activities alongside their practical skills.
It's like they were building a civilization piece by piece.
Yeah.
And it all seems to be happening way earlier than we'd expect. Professor Van Noy doesn't stop there, though. He brings up something even more mind-boggling, metallurgy.
He does. And this is where it gets particularly challenging to reconcile with our conventional understanding of history. Tubal Cain is described as a master craftsman in both bronze and iron.
Hold on. Iron? Isn't that supposed to come much later? I vaguely remember something about, like, a Bronze Age and then an Iron Age.
You're absolutely right. The Bronze Age is typically placed around 3000 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And the Iron Age around 1200 BC.
Okay.
To find evidence of iron working, you know, so early in the biblical narrative is really quite remarkable.
It makes you wonder if we've got our timelines all wrong. Are you telling me these people were potentially smelting iron before the pyramids were even built?
That's the question Professor Van Noy is raising. He acknowledges that it's a bold claim, of course. After all, you know, where's the archaeological proof for all this advanced technology? Shouldn't we have found more evidence by now?
Exactly. You'd think there would be more remnants of these sophisticated tool structures and all that.
Right.
So how does Professor Van Noy explain that?
Well, he emphasizes the fragmented nature of the archaeological record. Just because we haven't found something yet doesn't mean it never existed. It's like trying to piece together a giant puzzle with only a handful of pieces.
So it's possible there's a whole lot more out there just waiting to be discovered. Maybe we just haven't been looking in the right places.
That's certainly one possibility. Professor Van Noy even cites some intriguing examples, like iron beads from pre-dynastic Egypt dating back to between 4000 and 3200 BC.
Mm.
These findings suggest that ironworking may have existed earlier than previously thought, even if it wasn't, you know, widespread.
Okay, so maybe we shouldn't dismiss the biblical accounts outright. Maybe there's a kernel of truth hidden within these stories, even if it's been, you know, obscured by time and interpretation and all that.
That's a good way to put it. And I think Professor Van Noy's lecture prompts us to re-examine our assumptions about the past and to consider the possibility that we still have much to learn.
This is definitely making me rethink my own understanding of history. But if this advanced technology existed, what happened to it? Why don't we see more evidence of it in later periods?
That's a great question. And it leads us to another fascinating aspect of Professor Vannoy's lecture, the contrast between the lines of Cain and Seth.
Okay, refresh my memory. Cain and Seth.
Cain, as we've discussed, is the city builder, whose descendants develop these impressive technological skills. Seth, on the other hand, is another son of Adam and Eve, born after the death of Abel.
Right, right. And I'm guessing their stories represent two different paths of human development.
Exactly. Professor Vannoy suggests that while Cain's line is marked by technological advancement, it's also characterized by pride, violence, and a disregard for ethical boundaries.
So it's like they had the power, but maybe not the wisdom to use it responsibly.
That's a good way to put it. Professor Vannoy points to Lamech's his boastful declaration about killing a man for wounding him as an example of the dark side of this technological progress.
It's like a cautionary tale, isn't it? It makes you wonder if there are, inherent dangers to technological advancement when it's not balanced with ethical considerations.
Precisely. It raises questions about the nature of progress and the potential consequences of pursuing it without a moral compass.
This is all incredibly thought-provoking. So what about Seth's line? You mentioned contrast.
Yes. Professor Vannoy suggests that the focus in Seth's lineage is less on material progress and more on spiritual development.
Okay.
He highlights the importance of faith, righteousness, and walking with God.
So we have these two diverging paths of humanity, one driven by, technological ambition, the other by spiritual seeking. I wonder how these two paths ultimately intertwined.
That's a fascinating question, and it's one that Professor Vannoy explores in greater detail in his lecture. He delves into the genealogy of both lines, highlighting key figures and events that shaped the antediluvian world.
This is all so intriguing. I can't wait to dive deeper into those details.
We'll definitely explore those connections in part two. But for now, I think it's important to pause and let all this sink in.
You're right. The idea of a lost world of advanced technology before the flood is pretty mind-blowing. Makes you wonder what other secrets are hidden in the pages of, ancient text, just waiting to be uncovered.
It's a reminder that we should never stop questioning. Never stop exploring. Who knows what other mysteries are out there just waiting to be discovered, right?
Absolutely. Welcome back. I don't know about you, but I'm still processing this whole idea of cities and ironworking existing, long before the dates we usually associate with those developments.
It's definitely a shift in perspective. Leads to so many questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, like what exactly happened to this advanced knowledge? Did it just poof, disappear completely during the flood?
Well, Professor Vannoy suggests that the flood wasn't just a natural disaster. It was a divine judgment, a kind of reset button aimed at purging the world of, wickedness, corruption,
So we're back to that contrast between Cain and Seth's lineages.
Mm.
Cain's descendants, despite their technological prowess, seem to have gone down a pretty dark path.
Right. And this connects to a recurring theme in the lecture, the potential for humanity to misuse knowledge and power.
Right.
Professor Vannoy points out that technological advancement in and of itself, it isn't inherently good or bad. It's all about how it's used.
Okay. So a blacksmith who makes tools to help his community, that's good. But a blacksmith who forges weapons for conquest and violence, not so good.
Exactly. It's the intention behind the technology that matters. And Professor Vannoy argues that Cain's line, with its focus on material progress, self-aggrandizement, ultimately lost sight of that crucial ethical dimension.
I'm seeing a parallel to our own world here. We have incredible technology right at our fingertips, but are we always using it for the right reasons? Are we considering the ethical implications of our, our innovations?
That's a crucial question for us to ponder. Professor Vannoy's analysis of the antediluvian world, it reminds us that technology, when it's divorced from moral considerations, well, it can lead to some pretty destructive consequences.
Almost like a warning from history. If these advanced civilizations could collapse, despite all their knowledge and skills, what does that say about our own vulnerability?
It's a sobering thought, and it underscores the importance of learning from the past, even if that past is shrouded in mystery and speculation.
Let's get back to the biblical account for a moment. Professor Vannoy digs into the genealogies of both Cain and Seth's lines, right? What interesting tidbits did he find there?
Well, he points out some fascinating details that hint at the complex interplay between these two lineages. For instance, he notes that both lines had individuals with remarkably long lifespans. This suggests that longevity wasn't, you know, unique to one path or the other.
That's interesting. I always thought that extremely long lifespans were mainly associated with, you know, the patriarchs like Noah, who descended from Seth.
Right. That's the common perception. But Professor Vannoy highlights figures like Mahalalel from Cain's line, who lived to be, get this, 895 years old, according to Genesis.
Whoa, that's even longer than Methuselah, who's, you know, traditionally considered the oldest person in the Bible.
Exactly. And this detail, well, it challenges the simple dichotomy we often create between these two lineages. It suggests that there may have been more interaction, more intermingling between them than we typically assume.
So maybe it wasn't a strict separation between like good and bad or advanced and primitive. Maybe it was more nuanced than that.
Precisely. And Professor Vannoy suggests that this intermingling may have contributed to the spread of knowledge and technology, you know, across both lines.
That makes sense. After all, even if the flood was, you know, a cataclysmic event, it's unlikely that every single trace of antediluvian technology was just like completely wiped out.
Right. And this brings us to a point that Professor Vannoy emphasizes throughout his lecture, the importance of approaching ancient texts like Genesis with, you know, with an open mind, a willingness to consider multiple interpretations.
So we shouldn't just take everything literally. We should also be looking for those deeper meanings, the historical context, all of that.
Exactly. And we should be open to the possibility that our understanding of the past, well, it's constantly evolving as new discoveries are made, new perspectives emerge.
I like the idea that history isn't static. You know,
yeah.
it's a dynamic process of exploration, interpretation, and reinterpretation.
Absolutely. And I think Professor Vannoy's lecture, it embodies that spirit. He's not claiming to have all the answers.
Yeah.
He's encouraging us to ask questions, to dig deeper, to challenge that conventional thinking.
I appreciate that approach. It's not about, you know, blindly accepting or rejecting any particular theory, right? It's about engaging with the material, coming to our own conclusions.
Exactly. And that process of critical inquiry, well, that's what makes these deep dives so rewarding.
I'm already feeling like I've learned so much, but I have to admit, I'm still a bit puzzled by one thing. If this advanced technology existed before the flood, why didn't it re-emerge more quickly afterward?
That's a great question, and it's one that Professor Vannoy addresses in the latter part of his lecture. He suggests that the flood wasn't just a physical event. It also represented a profound cultural and psychological trauma.
So it's like the world had to start over from scratch.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of rebuilding infrastructure, but also in terms of, you know, rediscovering knowledge and skills and all that.
Precisely. Imagine the impact of losing not just your homes and possessions, but your entire cultural heritage. Your accumulated wisdom, your technological advancements.
It would be devastating. It's like hitting the reset button on human progress.
Exactly. And I think that helps to explain why it took so long for humanity to regain the level of technological sophistication that may have existed in the antediluvian world.
Wow, that puts things in a whole new perspective. I'm starting to see the flood not just as like a destructive event, but also as a turning point in human history, a moment of both loss and new beginnings.
That's a very insightful observation. And it leads us to another intriguing aspect of Professor Vannoy's lecture, the role of divine providence in shaping human history.
Okay, I'm intrigued. How does Professor Vannoy connect the flood to the idea of divine providence?
He suggests that even amidst the chaos, the destruction, God was working to preserve a remnant of humanity and to guide them towards a new path. He points to the story of Noah and his family who were chosen to survive the flood and to repopulate the earth.
So even in judgment, there was mercy, there was hope.
Exactly. And Professor Vannoy argues that this theme of divine providence, it continues to play out throughout biblical history. God is actively involved in human affairs, you know, guiding and directing events, even when it's not immediately apparent to us.
That's a comforting thought, especially when we consider the challenges and uncertainties of our own times. It's like a reminder that there's a bigger plan at work, even when things seem chaotic and unpredictable.
Precisely. And I think that sense of hope and purpose, that's what ultimately distinguishes Seth's line from Cain's.
I'm seeing a connection here to what we were discussing earlier about the ethical dimension of technology. Maybe it's not just about the tools and the techniques themselves, but also about the values that guide our use of them.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's a crucial takeaway from Professor Van Noy's lecture. True progress isn't just about material advancement. It's about aligning our technological innovations with our highest ideals, our aspirations.
So it's about seeking wisdom alongside knowledge, compassion alongside power, and ultimately walking in harmony with God's purposes.
Beautifully said. And I think that message, it resonates just as powerfully today as it did in the antediluvian world.
This has been an incredible journey so far. We've explored ancient mysteries, challenged those conventional timelines, and even pondered the ethical implications of technology. I can't wait to see where Professor Van Noy takes us in the final part of his lecture. What other insights does he have in store for us?
Well, in the final part, Professor Van Noy delves into the post-flood world, and he explores how the remnants of antediluvian knowledge may have influenced the development of later civilizations. He examines archaeological evidence, analyzes ancient myths and legends, and even speculates on the possibility of lost technologies that are yet to be rediscovered. It's a fascinating exploration of the enduring legacy of the antediluvian world.
I can't wait. Let's take a quick pause, and then we'll dive right back in.
Welcome back to our deep dive into antediluvian technology. I'm still kind of reeling from this whole idea that the flood might have been like a reset button for humanity, you know, a moment of both destruction and new beginnings.
Yeah, it's a powerful concept. Makes you wonder what traces of that pre-flood world might have survived. Did any of that advanced knowledge, you know, did it get passed down?
That's exactly what I was hoping Professor Van Noy would address in this final part of his lecture. Yeah. Did he find any clues in the post-flood world, you know, that hint at these lost civilizations and all that?
He did. And he starts by looking at some of the earliest civilizations that emerged after the flood. The Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Indus Valley civilization.
Okay, I'm all ears. What did he find?
Well, he points to the sudden appearance of sophisticated technologies, cultural practices, you know, in these civilizations.
Things like writing, mathematics, astronomy, monumental architecture. They seem to just pop up relatively quickly, almost as if they were, you know, drawing on a pre-existing body of knowledge.
That's intriguing. It's almost as if they were like picking up where someone else left off. Rather than starting from scratch.
Exactly. And Professor Van Noy argues that this rapid development, it's difficult to explain through, you know, the conventional evolutionary models of cultural progress. It suggests that there may have been some kind of transmission of knowledge, perhaps through oral traditions or even maybe through scattered remnants of written records that somehow survived the flood.
So it's like those ancient myths and legends that we hear about. Could they actually be based on real events, real people from the antediluvian world?
That's a possibility that Professor Van Noy explores. He looks at stories like the Epic of Gilgamesh, which describes a great flood and a search for immortality. He also examines ancient Egyptian texts that mention a time before the pharaohs, you know, a golden age ruled by gods and demigods.
So we're talking about potential connections between biblical accounts and other ancient traditions. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see a bigger picture here, kind of a shared human memory of a time before the flood, a time of both wonder and calamity.
Exactly. And Professor Van Noy suggests that these shared memories, these echoes of the past, they may hold clues to the lost knowledge and technologies of the antediluvian world.
Okay, so we have ancient myths, rapid technological advancements. What other evidence did Professor Van Noy present?
Well, he delves into the archaeological record itself, pointing to some intriguing anomalies that challenge conventional interpretations. For instance, he cites the discovery of massive stone structures like Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, which dates back to around 9,000 BC.
Okay.
Long before the supposed invention of agriculture.
Wait, so these structures, they predate even the earliest settlements like Çatalhöyük How is that possible?
That's the question that has archaeologists baffled. Göbekli Tepe is it's a complex of massive stone pillars, intricately carved with animal motifs, abstract symbols. The level of sophistication, the craftsmanship, it's simply astounding for that time period.
It's almost as if they had access to advanced tools, techniques that,
yeah,
that we wouldn't expect them to have.
Exactly. And Professor Vannoy suggests that these anomalies, these outliers in the archaeological record, they may be remnants of the antediluvian world. Hints of a lost civilization that possessed knowledge and skills beyond our current understanding.
This is all incredibly fascinating. But I have to admit, I'm still a bit skeptical. It's hard to reconcile these ancient stories and archaeological anomalies with our established scientific understanding of history.
I understand your skepticism, and Professor Vannoy acknowledges that his interpretations are, you know, speculative,
mm-hmm,
and that they challenge conventional wisdom. But he encourages us to approach these mysteries with an open mind and a willingness to consider alternative possibilities.
So he's not saying he has all the answers.
Yeah.
But he's suggesting that we shouldn't be afraid to ask questions,
mm-hmm,
to explore ideas that challenge our assumptions.
Precisely. He's inviting us to participate in a process of discovery, to become explorers ourselves, digging into the past, piecing together the fragments of a lost world.
That's what I love about these deep dives. They challenge us to think critically, to expand, mm-hmm, our perspectives, and to realize that there's always more to learn.
Absolutely. And in the case of antediluvian technology, there's a sense of wonder and possibility that really captures the imagination. What if there are lost technologies out there just waiting to be rediscovered? What if our ancient ancestors, what if they knew more than we give them credit for?
Those are questions that I think will stay with me long after this deep dive is over. It makes you wonder what secrets are still hidden,
yeah,
you know, within those ancient texts, those archaeological sites, those echoes of the past.
And it makes you realize that the journey of discovery, it's never truly finished. There's always another layer to uncover, another perspective to consider, another mystery to explore.
Well said. On that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up our deep dive into antediluvian technology. We covered a lot of ground from the biblical accounts to ancient myths to archaeological anomalies.
And we've only just scratched the surface. There's so much more to explore, so many more questions to ask.
But I think we've achieved our goal here, to dive deep into Professor Vannoy's his fascinating lecture and to extract some key insights that will hopefully spark your own curiosity, inspire you to continue exploring these mysteries.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe one day you'll be the one to uncover the next piece of the puzzle, right? The
mm-hmm.
the next clue that sheds light on the lost world of antediluvian technology.
Until then, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep.